From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
And good evening to our viewers out west tonight. We are rushing on the air to get word to you that the grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri, has reached a decision. That decision is no reason to find charges against the police officer in the case of the death of the unarmed teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. The announcement came in court after the last few minutes. The St. Louis County prosecutor, Robert McCullough, made the announcement with a long preamble explaining how arduous a process that has been. Grand jury sitting for 25 days, listening to 70 hours of testimony from 60 separate witnesses. Here's how he made the formal announcement.
They determined that no probable cause exists to file any charge against Officer Wilson and returned a no true bill on each of the five indictments. The physical and scientific evidence examined by the grand jury, combined with the witness statements supported and substantiated by that physical evidence, tells the accurate and tragic story of what happened.
So there was a portion of his formal announcement. Let's go to NBC's Miguel Almaguer. He is in Ferguson, Missouri. Miguel, as we speak and throughout the night, there's going to be various camera shots of ground level from up above, from helicopters, and we're going to try not to assume too much from any one slice of this. In the shot we're looking at right now, we see a line of police officers, we see a police barricade, and television crews with lights and citizens on the other side. Tell us what you know on the ground.
Brian, good evening. We can certainly feel that sense of tension in the air here. Those live pictures you're looking at outside the Ferguson Police Department, we have been outside that police department over the last 2 weeks here where we have seen steady crowds, crowds of the 20s and 30s, but never crowds quite this big. Of course, the atmosphere there is tense. We have reports that there are hundreds of people there, some of them yelling at police officers. As we saw at the top of the broadcast, there were groups running away from this demonstration. We can only imagine that there certainly will be a tense atmosphere out there. This was a concern across this community that this would be the outcome that many feared. They feared it because they were worried this would spark protests, and with those protests could come riots and, of course, violence. The Brown family has just released a statement. I want to read to you in part of what that says from the Brown family. It says, "We are profoundly disappointed that the killer of our child will not face the consequences of his actions. While we understand that many others share our pain, we ask that you channel your frustration in ways that will make a positive change. We need to work together to fix the system that allowed this to happen." That, of course, from the Brown family. Of course, the concern tonight is that many will not channel their frustration in the right way. There are businesses here all along this area that have been boarded up for weeks. There is concern that there will be widespread protest across the city and that that protest will, of course, spill into violence. The National Guard is in the area. We know the governor earlier this week issued a state of emergency. The police department has spent in recent days more than $170,000 on riot gear, things like gas masks, tear gas, and of course handcuffs. Brian, everyone in this community, not just in this region, but across the nation, is bracing for protests that could turn violent. Tonight, no signs of violence just yet. Of course, that decision just coming out. The crowds here continuing to swell on the streets. And as you can see in this live picture outside of police headquarters, Brian.
All right, Miguel, thank you. And Miguel's in the field. The portion of the Brown family statement that had not yet reached Miguel when it came time to read it, it goes on. "We respectfully ask that you please keep your protests peaceful. This is important. Answering violence with violence is not the appropriate reaction." As we see something of a standoff in this aerial shot, and again, the caution not to read too much into any one shot that we air on television. Our senior legal analyst, Cynthia McFadden, is here with us on the set. Cynthia, I'll put this in conversational terms. With social media, this word has already spread in bars, restaurants, American homes. To the question, how could that have happened? There's a very good legal answer, correct?
Well, the legal answer is that we give our police officers a wide latitude to react in these split seconds, life or death decisions that they're faced with every day. The law favors the police in some way. It says if a police officer reasonably fears, and the key word there is reasonably fears, that he or she is in imminent danger, they're allowed to react in a violent way. And so apparently the grand jury felt that in this circumstance, there wasn't sufficient evidence to prove that he wasn't in reasonable fear. Now, remember, the standard here is probable cause to indict, not beyond a reasonable doubt to convict. So the standard is a low one. But we heard the prosecutor said, as you said at the top of the broadcast, 25 days, 70 hours, 60 witnesses. That's a lot of information.
Even though there was at the bottom of the list a lesser charge that pretty much was a way to say that this happened in the heat of the moment.
Negligently. Yeah. Right, negligently. So that's the lowest possible count, which would have been involuntary manslaughter in the second degree, which was a negligent killing. The grand jury apparently walked away from that count as well.
Cynthia, thank you. Our justice correspondent, Pete Williams, has been watching and listening in Washington. Pete, people are going to want a remedy. They're going to want something better than the solution the justice system has been handed. Can they look for, do you think, the federal government to fill that gap?
My guess is no, Brian, but the federal government's investigation is not over and probably won't be for several more weeks. It's an entirely different legal standard and, in a way, a more difficult legal standard than the one the grand jury faced, whether to bring a federal civil rights case. There is one other possible remedy, of course, and that's that the Brown family could file a wrongful death action against the police officer. And there, actually, the law would be on the would help the family more, because the federal government, the Supreme Court cases would kick in, which don't are not as permissive as what law enforcement officers can do. So two chances, you're right, the Justice Department and a private lawsuit. But the all indications seem to be so far that the Justice Department is not likely to bring an indictment, although they've said very adamantly they have not reached any conclusion.
And, Pete, it's always been said if you're going to bring a civil case, a wrongful death case, that is easier done if you're coming off a criminal conviction or even a criminal trial. Is that correct?
No question about that. But still, if the family were to decide to try that, yes, it would be a taller order. But they could have access to all this evidence that the county is now going to release. This is, Brian, I think this is extraordinary. I can't remember ever where a grand jury, state or federal, when no charges are filed, the prosecutor is going to put all the evidence out there. It's very unusual, but that will be, if the family decides to pursue a case, it will have all that evidence at its disposal.
Pete Williams, thanks. Let's go back out to Miguel Almaguer in Ferguson. Miguel, we were saying all evening long that a possible blessing could be found in the weather. The streets are a different place than they were in the heat of mid-Missouri summer. Tonight, however, it appears that the number of people on the streets, even beneath the season greetings bunting, is growing.
Yeah, Brian, it's easily in the low 40s out here, and we certainly expect the temperature to drop throughout the night, but that doesn't seem to have any effect on the crowds. As you know, our live position is just at the epicenter of where there were the protests and, of course, the violence back in August. We're just two blocks away from where Michael Brown was killed. We have heard that many of the protesters will make their way to our location, to this area, after they make a stand at the Ferguson Police Department. You can see that some of them there are on the move while the crowds are still early and still continuing to grow. Over the last couple of minutes, we have heard cars honking their horns down this street. We have continue to hear several helicopters in the air, most likely police helicopters, keeping an eye on the movements of these demonstrators. Again, on the ground right now, we have been told that some of the confrontation between police and protesters have been heated. We were there just last night where protesters were yelling obscenities at many of the police officers. We imagine that it's a very similar scene today as it has been for the last couple of weeks. Those protesters have been out there for months, but we are seeing crowds that we have not seen in several days, at least, if not weeks. Brian, tense moments here on the streets, Brian.
All right, Miguel, thank you very much. Now, we're going to keep an eye on all of this, obviously, and a lot of it on the ground is happening as we move along. It's being ad-libbed because this is a circumstance no one could predict. But again, no charges against the police officer in the Ferguson case. We move on, however, to other news of import today, beginning with what came out of Washington this morning. A shakeup at the very top of the Pentagon, the civilian boss of all the men and women in uniform. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, who is himself a decorated combat veteran, made a surprise announcement that he's stepping down from his job, and the word around the Pentagon was his resignation was not necessarily his idea. We get our report on that tonight from our Pentagon correspondent, Jim Mikliszewski.
Less than 2 years on the job, a somber Chuck Hagel, flanked by President Obama and Vice President Biden, announced today he was calling it quits.
I have today submitted my resignation as Secretary of Defense. It's been the greatest privilege of my life.
The White House and Pentagon claim that after a series of three recent meetings with the president, it was Hagel who offered to step aside. But senior defense officials tell NBC News Hagel was forced to resign. As the war with ISIS exploded in Iraq and Syria, the White House appeared to lose confidence in Hagel as he questioned the administration's strategy. After President Obama called ISIS the junior varsity of terrorists, Hagel warned the militant force was a potential serious threat to the U.S.
They're beyond just a terrorist group. This is beyond anything that we've seen, so we must prepare for everything.
If the White House is frustrated with Hagel, the feeling is apparently mutual. Republican Senator John McCain said today Hagel was shut out of the White House inner circle and critical foreign policy decisions.
I can tell you he was in my office last week. He was very frustrated.
Critics claim that Hagel is being made a scapegoat for the administration's foreign policy shortfalls and blame the White House for micromanaging the war.
So I think the National Security Council around the president has micromanaged badly, I might add, these wars. Hagel was out of the loop.
As Hagel prepares to leave, former Pentagon Undersecretary Michelle Flournoy, former Deputy Secretary Ashton Carter, and Democratic Senator Jack Reed are considered the frontrunners for his job. White House officials claim they lost confidence in Hagel from the very beginning after disastrous Senate confirmation hearings. But officials here worry that if the White House persists in micromanaging every aspect of the Pentagon and military, nothing will change, no matter who gets the top job, Brian.
Jim Mikliszewski at the Pentagon for us tonight. Again, while we're watching the situation in Ferguson, we'll still move ahead with our broadcast, and still ahead for us on a Monday, shock and outrage on campus. The scandal rocks one of the most prestigious universities in our land. What happened when a young woman reported a brutal attack? And later, an unbelievable journey, a group on the adventure of a lifetime. They make a new friend for life along the way and through thick and thin. A major American university tonight has a lot to answer for now that claims of a particularly shocking sexual assault have been made public. As a result of the allegations, the University of Virginia has suspended all fraternities for the rest of the year. But many students say that's not nearly enough. We get our report tonight from our national correspondent, Peter Alexander.
A chorus of outrage. This weekend, angry students marched through the manicured grounds of the University of Virginia.
Blame the system!
The protests, a response to this lengthy Rolling Stone investigation into the alleged gang rape of a freshman at the Phi Kappa Psi fraternity house 2 years ago. An assault lasting 3 hours with seven attackers, leaving her beaten and bloody. And yet the victim, Jackie, who was sober, told the magazine her friends discouraged her from reporting it.
They told her that she would be blackballed from UVA social life, that her reputation would be ruined as the person who cried rape.
When she did come forward several months later, the article says the administration gave her options but failed her by not insisting she go to the police.
I think that when I first read the article, I was simply sick to my stomach. There was much more information in Rolling Stone than we had.
Tomorrow, the university's board will meet to discuss its sexual assault policies. UVA has asked Charlottesville police to investigate Jackie's case.
Okay.
Phi Kappa Psi, its house vandalized, is promising to cooperate, saying the acts depicted in the article are beyond unacceptable, they are vile and intolerable. UVA is one of 88 schools under investigation by the federal government for its handling of sexual assault complaints.
It's not just a UVA issue. This is a pervasive national epidemic that we are hoping to continue to fight here at UVA, the place that we call home, and spread this message nationally.
This case has brought to light a staggering statistic. More than 180 students here have been expelled for honor code violations, like cheating, since 1998. But not one kicked out for sexual assault. As for the alleged victim, Jackie remains a UVA student.
She has already come a long way, and I have a lot of hope for her.
And hope her story will provoke real change. Peter Alexander, NBC News, Charlottesville, Virginia.
We're back in a moment with a mystery solved. Who was that man in uniform who at times brought highway traffic to a halt? This was a moment on Veterans Day that was striking for its simple patriotism. An Army veteran in full military dress saluting a flag on a highway overpass in Utah. He stood there at his post for an hour. Some people honked their horns. Some got out of their cars to come up and shake his hand. But we didn't know who he was until now. He's identified himself as 43-year-old Jonathan Walker. He's a retired Army helicopter pilot from the 3rd Armored Cav. He said he did what he did on the day he did to call attention to all veterans in his own way. And a story about perseverance making the rounds on the web when a group of Swedish adventurers went on a 430-mile trek through Ecuador. They met a dog along the way. They fed him a meatball, and right then he decided he was their friend for life. He walked with them. He swam alongside them in the dark. He walked some more, and then he slept alongside them at night. They adopted him. They named him Arthur. When it was all over, they took him to the dock, had him checked out. He had to wear the cone of shame for a little while as not to lick his wounds. But he's now fully an adopted Swede with a loving family now to return his kindness. When we come back, a near and dear member of our family among those awarded with a high honor at the White House today. Finally, tonight, a slew of remarkable Americans in one room. They come from all walks of life. The achievements that brought them together at the White House today, as distinct as they are all diverse people. But they all now share one thing in common, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And the recipients include a very familiar face around here. Our report tonight from NBC's Andrea Mitchell.
The nation's highest civilian honor awarded today to 18 great Americans, including the man who coined the phrase, the greatest generation, NBC's Tom Brokaw.
On the night that the Berlin Wall fell, only one American network anchor was there reporting live. He reported on Watergate, snuck a camera into Tiananmen Square, sat down for the first one-on-one with Mikhail Gorbachev by an American TV reporter.
The greatest generation, now part of the lexicon.
I never thought that I would coin a phrase that would have that kind of enduring appeal.
Others honored included the three civil rights workers slain in Mississippi in 1964, Andrew Goodman, James Cheney, and Michael Schwerner. Record-setting Oscar nominee Meryl Streep.
There are so many things you don't understand.
Wore a nun's habit, faced down a charging lion, mastered every accent under the sun.
Steve Lynn Morris, better known as Stevie Wonder. His classic, Talking Book, was the first album a young Barack Obama ever bought.
That thing got so worn out. Had all scratches.
And for her life's devotion to human rights, Ethel Kennedy, grandmother of 40, including Congressman Joe Kennedy. She marched with farm workers in Florida only a year ago, today receiving the award first created by President Kennedy months before he was assassinated, in the same room where his casket was brought to lie in repose.
What inspires you to keep up this work?
You know, when you see somebody in trouble, your natural feeling is there something I could do? And really, everybody can do it.
Including helping to raise money for ALS research this summer by pouring a bucket of ice water over her head. As you may know, she nominated me to do it as well, and as you may know, I chose to write a check instead.
A journalist, artists, freedom fighters, heroes all. Andrea Mitchell, NBC News, Washington.
Congratulations to all. Special congratulations to one in particular. That's our broadcast on a Monday night as we start a new week. Thank you for being here with us. We're back on the air tonight the moment they announced the grand jury decision in Ferguson. I'm Brian Williams, and of course, we hope to see you right back here tomorrow evening. Good night.